You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable unto thee, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. In the 12th chapter of St. Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, he's coming to terms with an extremely pertinent, in some ways caustic, damaging element of the human life cycle when he tries to ask God to relieve him of a persistent, chronic, unshakable seeming problem that he has. He never actually tells us what the precise problem that he has is, but he talks about it as a thorn in the flesh. St. Paul had a thorn in the flesh, some kind of disability or weakness or disappointment or loss or impasse that created a pain, and it was persistent. It didn't stop, and apparently he prayed to God three times to be delivered from this terrible problem he had. And I think you can identify with a persistent problem that either you have or someone you are close to has. You have a son or a daughter, a grown son or a grown daughter, who seems to have a persistent character fault or habitual weakness that keeps coming up again and again and again. This child cannot get control of whatever it is, and you've done everything for him or her, but it's still a perpetual issue. Initially, it was her problems in school, but then, like everybody else who has problems, she went to Jackson Hole. That's where you go. You go to Jackson Hole. So if someone says they have a child in Jackson Hole, which they no longer do because now it's Los Angeles. Seriously, people don't go to Jackson Hole anymore. They go to Los Angeles or Portland. And of course, if it's Portland, you'll never see them again. You say to yourself, I have the privilege, because we were in a parish in New York and Westchester for years and years and years ago, I could say to someone now who's in their 80s, well, how did it go with Nancy or Bill, whom we knew when she was 12? And this is the usual answer. Well, it never really righted itself. We tried everything, and right now things are sort of okay. Right now we're in contact with him out in Aspen or wherever it is, but it still never really righted itself. Or, you know, your husband had those depressive episodes, didn't he, in his 30s when we knew him? And she said, yes. This is 40 years later. I love my husband very much. And he had this gravitation towards depressive affect. He would become depressed every 6 or 7 months. And we had therapy and we did everything we knew and meds and this and that. And I have to tell you, Paul, 6 years ago, he took his own life. And I feel so badly that I couldn't help my husband find his way. And so you find that people are often confronted, in one case or another, with one particular person whom they love, who has a persistent and non-giving way pattern. And so you can see why St. Paul's confession, acknowledgement that he had an impasse, that he had prayed three times to have God heal him. And he had only received these words, I'm not going to take it away because you have to be weak. Because when you are weak in yourself, then I am strong. He says it very clearly in verse 9. He says, when I am weak, then he is strong. And I want to talk a little bit about that. There's a great line in Beyond the Fringe. Beyond the Fringe was a group of really, really smart, young, ironic English undergrads who were pre-Monty Python. And in 1964, they organized a series of skits called Beyond the Fringe. And they're very funny if you lived in 1964. And one of them pretended he was a vicar, a minister. And he gets up and says this. It's all a bit of a sardonic joke, but it's true. The vicar says, "You know, life is like a tin of sardines. There's always that little bit in the corner." Now, that's very clever. Life is like a tin of sardines. Have you ever tried to open an English tin of sardines? You have to have a PhD, and then it's not enough. But there's always the little bit in the corner. And I'm just wondering if you can identify with that. Is there a life that's, you've mostly derived benefit from your life, and so many good things have occurred, but there's still a little bit in the corner. And I don't think that's unusual. And the question is, if he says, "I am weakened by my inability to handle it, and yet when I am weak, God is strong," what does that mean? Well, I'm going to give you two examples and then see what you think. Jung, Carl Jung, don't tune out. Carl Jung insightfully said, quote, "People will do anything, no matter how absurd, in order to avoid facing their own souls." And that is an interesting quote, isn't it? People will do anything, no matter how absurd, in order to avoid facing their own souls. And my job as preacher is to really bring the listener really to the point, you might almost call it the point of human death, because it's at that point that most people are given, for whatever reason, the ability to look at the little piece in the corner with clear-eyed honesty and power. And that is what we want to have happen to individuals by definition before. Now, an example of this would be the movie Marnie. Marnie is a 1964 Alfred Hitchcock movie starring Tippi Hedren and, you guessed it, Sean Connery. And Marnie is a person who is in the grip of a persistent character flaw based on a tragic experience as a child that is not fixed. And she not only robs one successful family business of $70,000, but she's caught robbing a second, having changed her hair color, of $70,000. And finally, Sean Connery gets her to admit that she's done it seven times. She has robbed white-collar family businesses seven times. Now, he, initially because of a kind of rational observer interest, but later because he loves her, comes to understand that the origin of her compulsive kleptomania is something that occurred in relationship to her mother when she was 8 years old. And he is able, from love, to take her into the heart of darkness to talk to her mother again, who's still alive, about this childhood trauma that had been covered up, obviously, and she faces it, and she is healed. It's a remarkable story of someone with a thorn in the flesh who is healed by lovingly being enabled to go back into the heart of what caused it. Now, this is what we all want, but of course, I don't expect you to do it. People don't want to do it. Do you? People will constantly say to me, "Well, Paul, you ought to go back into that particular thing that happened in relationship to your mom and dad at such and such a point." And my answer, although I say, "Yes, I think I should," but what I say in my inner self is, "Are you out of your mind? I'm going to Jackson Hole, excuse me. And but this is what I learned. I learned a long time ago that if in some form or another God enables you to go back to the heart of the woundedness, and it can happen, miracles can take place. Because he said, when you are weak, I am strong. In other words, when you give way to the inability and paralysis you have in relationship to him, to her, to them, or possibly yourself, God intervenes. It's like it actually happens. I give up. My life's a tragic mess on this front. And then God walks in. Happens all the time. And, you know, I was in Germany last week at the funeral of Jürgen Moltmann, who was a very wonderful German theologian who died at age 98 10 days ago. And he had been a POW from age 15 to 17, and all his friends had been killed. And whether he was German or Allied, he was German. He was only 16, and everything was lost. And he came through this principle of having been taken down to ground zero as a 16-year-old to believing the following. He said, Herr Zahl, remember, life is not about action consequence. Life is about death resurrection. Now, this is powerful from an academic theologian. It's like, you mean it's real, right? He said, life is not about action consequence, which is what I normally live my life doing. You do too, probably. Life is about death and resurrection. And that struck me as powerful. And I thought of Neville Shute, the Australian novelist, who used to say that his books were all optimistic tragedies. Now think about that for a minute. Not tragicomedies and not tragedies, but optimistic tragedies. In other words, usually at the end of his books, somebody dies because of life, but something else happens related to that that changes everything in someone else's life. And he said he found again and again in his life that something came to the point of complete paralysis and ending. And when that was finally kind of, God would create a miracle. Now I'm going to say one more thing, and then you take it home and see what you think. The reason I believe this, and I really do, I can honestly say I believe it across the board, is because at one point in the month of April, 1970, I was on a college campus which was riven by massive demonstrations because of something that was called Kent State. There had been an invasion of Cambodia, and college campuses across the U.S., like recently, were riven apart by demonstrations relating to something called the Kent State riots. And where I happened to be at the time, there were about 12,000 students, some of whom were trying to go to class, which weren't being held, half of which were activists who were carrying anti-Vietnam War signs, and the other half were sort of more traditional undergrads who were carrying American flags. And the place was on the verge of a violent episode. And it was the low point of this speaker's life. The low point. I was 18. The low point of this speaker's life. But it had nothing to do with politics. It was the low point of my life because of something else, a personal matter, which, by the way, always outweighs politics. I don't care what you say. Love is infinitely more important than a political party. It just is. I mean, it may not, maybe it shouldn't be, but love that is rejected is far more important than a bad election, and love that is accepted is infinitely more Olympian than a bad election. Suffice it to say that I was on the first side of that, surrounded by political undergraduates death warmed over. I was so upset that I'd stopped listening to Sly and the Family Stone and was instead listening to, who was the worst possible composer of the time? Rod McEwen. I was so desperate, and this is a sign, you have your sign, your form of it. I was so desperate because of something that had nothing to do with politics that I was actually listening to Rod McEwen. So you can see that suicide was very near. So I'm walking in this morass of thousands of undergraduates, all dyspeptic, nobody was happy, a mess, carrying library books to return to the library and get out of there as quickly as possible. And I run straight into a person. I walk straight into a person. And I drop my books. And if I'd gone 5 degrees to the right, I would have missed the person. If I'd walked 5 seconds earlier or later, I would have missed this, like that. If I had been looking ahead, but I was distracted, thinking about something else, Rod McEwen, nothing would have happened. But I walked directly, without even thinking about it, into another person. Bam! My books dropped. I looked at the other person. The other person just had a notebook. Their books didn't drop. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I said, did we meet somewhere? And then this person and I talked for 3 minutes, surrounded by thousands of screaming anti-Kent State demonstrators. I then left, and this person went. Had God not made that encounter happen, there would be no Mockingbird Ministries. There would be no grandchildren who sound like characters out of Harry Potter. There would be no 50th anniversary of anything. There would be no happy years in Birmingham at the Advent. There would probably be one dead, depressed, anti-hippie, friendless, now highly forgetful human being. And that would be it. Now, the fact is, the exact opposite happened. A miracle happened at the point of complete desperate paralysis. And that took this person. It gave me the unshakable confidence that when you're actually able to feel your lowest ebb of lack of potentiality and hope and just stop, God is the one who makes you strong and gives a miracle. And I present it to you because I believe it, and I hope it may stimulate a fresh infusion of hope when otherwise you might feel defeated and alone. Dear God, when we are defeated or alone, come to our rescue as you have done for many. I thank you for what you've done, and I thank you for your work with St. Paul, and I thank you that that's the way it goes. Please help us, for Jesus' sake. Amen.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you will join us at one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.